They have local partners. ART Solar is the local partner. LONGi is ART's solar supplier, and that's also a big Chinese firm. But in both cases, the push on localization and designation is to encourage these firms to localize more on the back of the risk mitigation IPP and bid window 5, and then future bid windows as well. And of course, the second round impact is that once the international solar PV players have a good sense of the pipeline of IPP projects, we are hoping that we'll see some of the big producers actually locating plants in South Africa. And of course, because we already have two manufacturers in the Eastern Cape, our hope would be that we can convince those foreign investors to invest in the Eastern Cape for the production of those panels as well. So in terms of the costs, so I think we've covered the guarantees. In terms of the costs, it's very difficult to say at the moment, Honorable Boshoff. We've done some calculations around the potential cost-raising impact, but because we're beginning to get a medium-term pipeline of demand for solar panels, the prices are changing all the time. At the moment, our view would be that there isn't a significant cost premium that's been paid. It's under, in our calculations, under 20%, but it does change depending on the size of the panel, depending how much is localized in the panel production, and where the panel is going to be finally used. If it has to be transported up to Gauteng or the Northern Cape, then of course that has a cost-raising impact as well. But our view would be, based on the best information in front of us at the moment, that we're not paying a significant premium, and we are creating a market for other solar panel manufacturers to seriously consider locating in South Africa, and for Seraphim and ART Solar to seriously consider ramping up production. In fact, our information is that Seraphim is seriously considering that already on the back of the risk mitigation IPP process, as well as bid window 5. So we're quite bullish about the opportunities there. Then in terms of the question around the sanitary pads project, Honorable Boshoff, this is a project that was brought to the National Empowerment Fund by the entrepreneur, a woman entrepreneur, and we were very glad to be able to support the project. We haven't engaged with the Department of Education yet, but I think it's a very valuable suggestion. We'll take that back to the team that's been working with the company, suggested to them. We were able to assist the company to win a first tender, which has really helped the cash flow of the company. But I think what I understood you to be suggesting is that we need to expand the company and also make sure that we are localizing sanitary pads wherever we can. And so we'll engage our counterparts at National Department of Education around that. Honorable Chair, in terms of your questions around the industrial parks and what we're doing in the former Transkei, with your permission, Chairperson, can I ask my colleague Tammy Klassen, who is our regional director, and I see that the acting DDG, Jacob Mafuta, has also just joined the call, but I think that perhaps Tami would be best placed to answer that question, if that's okay with you, with your permission, Chair.
No, it's okay. Tami can go ahead and respond.
Great. Thank you, Chair.
Tami, over to you.
Yep. Thank you, Chair. Can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear. Okay.
Thank you very much. We are currently involved in two of the major projects, which is the Vulindlela one, where we have supported that industrial park twice. Obviously, we have encountered a lot of challenges, amongst them some of the challenges of theft of some of the fencing and the security features that have also been subsequently put or installed at the place. Of course, there is a continuous engagement together with the municipality in finding a better solution. One of the solutions that we've come up with is a revised format of how we are now going to be supporting industrial park revitalization program, where all the stakeholders must take accountability and also put skin on the game. That is to say that the municipality needs to be responsible in some form or the other. Some of the work that we've been asking them is for maintenance, making sure that there's insurance for all the things that have been supported through the pass from the DTIC. But further than that, the approach as well is we are now going to develop the industrial parks in sight through a zonal approach, where we're not going to just zone the whole industrial park, but we are going to look at it through enclaves that are workable from inside, so that you can also protect the movement of the personnel or the people around the community. Because one of the problems that we have encountered is that some of these areas are ingrained within the community social infrastructure. And so we've got to be wise in how then we then now put in the feature of industrializing whilst helping those communities to have access to factories and firms to go for employment, but also to make sure that there's ease of movement within. In some of the areas where you find that maybe some of the assets were actually supported, but to a certain extent were not completed, it may have been an issue that we have also discovered. Some of the issues in terms of contestation that is between the contractors that we probably not paid well or on time and with the service provider. However, those issues now and then we have been coming and mediating on those, and there's been quite a good solution to finding a workable solution together with the team there. So in a nutshell, those would be what we have been doing in the Transkei area in Mthatha. But the other feature, which is your concern in this case on the West Coast, through the West Coast, as is at the proposed one, we're looking at it from developing a new city, which is the discussion now at play together with the municipality and the district itself. Because what we are doing is the congestion inside the Mthatha city have made it unattainable for you to do any revitalization of the city, even for some of the sectors which are very vital, such as the services and also the other, I think, sector, which is the where they do the cultural and the knitwear inside the industrial park itself. But you find that there is a need for us to expand the city. So one of the formats that we have adopted is then to use the proposed Wild Coast SEZ, which is now an industrial park, to actually expand the city going and incorporating the airport that was refurbished and developed. So that will give, of course, I think, rise to the agro-processing sector, which is critical. There has been quite workable clusters, such as the wool, because of the number of sheep that is being farmed by there, and they've been doing quite a good work in wool clip, you know, refining of the wool. And then, of course, they've been sending it to PE in Gqeberha, but now we're looking at, as well, them beneficiating more of the wool there and developing further produce there before it's sent to the export market. The SEZ itself, the proposed Wild Coast SEZ, is very key to the area because it then attracts many other goods from the five municipalities that belong to the districts of OR Tambo. And of course, it's centered around the issue of agro or agri-related business. There are certain clusters which have been tested and are good and ideal that they will be able to actually spare that and sustain that SEZ going forward once it's designated. The format of adopting this phased-in approach from industrial park into is because we are trying to increase the investment quantum, as Stephen had alluded in his presentation earlier. Currently, there's less than around about 250 million that was secured. But however, there is about 1.2 billion rands that are in negotiation in different phases that have been secured. And of course, you know, once the term sheets have been signed with the investors, we can then start to look at it seriously as a SEZ potential designated, enclave. But on the whole, that's what we've been doing. The area of Queenstown, which is, of course, the other Esibeleni, you know, industrial park, there's work there that's happening, but that's on the Ciskei area, Chair. I think that's the work currently that we are doing then on the Transkei area. The DTIC in very other numerous forums has been extensively involved in helping the community and working with the EXEC and together with the provincial department and also the local, development agency, to try and do a lot of work around economic development and promoting industrialization from 10 years back. So we've been involved continuously in helping the area to develop and promote itself and its goods that it produces in the area. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Klasse. Are you done, DTIC?
Yes, Chair. I think we covered all of the questions that you posed and the other members. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. Chair of the Board of PRASA, and then followed by the Group CEO.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you for the question that has been posed. One question deals with the Moloto Corridor and what's happening with the Moloto Corridor. And the other question deals really with the derailment of the blue trains. Maybe the Group CEO can start and then I'll just end with the end. Moloto Corridor will deal with that question in two parts because by and large we also have a Department of Transport where the most of the other policy work come from, and I think the DDG Ngwaku can then deal with that issue, and then we deal with the remainder of issues and then of course going to Transkei in terms of what's the thinking around the rail. Marco, can you deal with that first one and then we deal with that Group CEO and then we finalize it?
Thanks, Chair, and good afternoon to Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Minister, and colleagues present. To provide a background on the progress on Moloto, to remind Honorable Members that the project was registered with National Treasury as a PP program. We did conduct a feasibility study as the department, and we followed the PPP process in terms of Regulation 16. We did together with, obviously, with PRASA leading, submitted TA application, which was not approved. And then moving forward, we then focused on the budget facility framework, which we thought we'd get more funding on this particular project. We motivated with National Treasury. Even on that, we couldn't get approval in terms of the funding through the MINCOMBAT. We have been approached by the Provincial Department of Transport in Mpumalanga. They have an interest that we need to resuscitate the project. We did engage with DG National Treasury, with our DG, looking in terms of what are the issues we can be able to deal with. So the feasibility study needs to be updated, obviously, to respond to some of the issues that were raised by MINCOMBAT. But we have taken a decision together with the province to then resubmit the project through ESA South Africa, which is an element of PICC led by the Department of Public Works with Dr. Ramakgopa. So we'll therefore, we're engaging with them in terms of their requirements of submission, and we'll probably in the next engagement update the committee with any progress that is would be made in that regard. Thanks, Chair, that's my update.
GCO?
Chair, I think that at this point, from a PRASA perspective, I think what the DDG has just outlined to the Honorable Chair and the members of the committee would, I think, suffice at this point. Save to say that obviously as PRASA, we would be interested to participate in any future long-term development of the corridor. I know it has been something that has been on the table for a number of years, but we would be certainly be interested in taking a lead role if it was to materialize. And I know those discussions have been held in the past, but we have not at this point engaged directly in those discussions, as we've been more concerned and preoccupied with our present range of challenges. But certainly something as we plan our long-term strategy, then it is something that we would want to be certainly a major part of that, because we believe we have the requisite skills, both technical and from an operational standpoint, that would be able to drive that process. Thank you, Chair.
The derailment of the blue train?
Chair, the recent derailment of the blue train, I'm afraid I must point that across to our Transnet colleagues. As is well known, I think the blue train still falls under the within the Transnet family, but there were no casualties that were sustained in the derailment. It is something that I believe is being investigated by the rail safety regulator, but from a PRASA perspective, we were not involved in any way. We're only glad that there was no injury or loss of life in the incident. But I would ask the Transnet colleagues to respond to that one. Thank you, Chair. On the
yes.
Chair, if you want me to take Dimbaza, the integrated transport plan. We would want to see at this stage, it's not been something that has been directly on our radar, but it will be something obviously, Chair, that in terms of planning and our planning team that we would want to look at and see how we can participate. But I'm conscious of the need to make sure that we are not overstretched in a number of areas where we've got critical projects underway, but certainly it would be something that from the tech perspective, and from the planning side, we would take a look at, and then we would then be in a position to give an indication one way or the other, the scale of our involvement and whether also the feasibility of the project. But it's something that I think we would need to study more cautiously before we could give a comprehensive view. On the third question with respect to the eastern side of the Eastern Cape, there would need to be, I think, certainly, we would want to see more property upgrades in relation to the projects that are taking place there and the cost of that procurement. We are, as you know, Chair, very, very jealously guarding our resources and ensuring that the deployment of those resources is in line with not only the corporate plan, but the way in which we wish to structure our priorities in relation to the restoration of services. So these are things that whilst we will maintain an interest at some levels, I think our key priority areas are fairly well articulated, and we'd want to ensure that those get the priority in line with the expectations of restoring commuter rail services before we would embark on taking on additional responsibilities that would have to be in line with the resources that we have at our disposal and not to be overstretched, but certainly it's something that we would happily engage with the colleagues in the Eastern Cape. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me just end the question by just simply stating the following, that I do think that you have made an important observation and concern around development that goes outer to the urban area. In our corporate plan, we have identified the connectivity between the city and the urban, peri-urban, rural. We've identified that, for an example, we need to have a Motherwell resuscitation and that and so on, including whether it's going to the KZN, whether you're going to, we've identified the corridors, the critical corridors. But with the resource that dealing with the Transkei area part and the East London PE, but with the SMICA resources that we have, and of course the whole debate about vandalism, that the damage and the vandalism that has taken place, we then have to plan that we would, year on year, we would take sufficient corridors that the budget will allocate or allow for us to be able to deal with that particular area. So we were basically lined up the corridors because we can't do it all in one. The budget would not allow that. We're looking at the high volume corridors so that the high corridor, high volume corridors can also help us generate income and resource to be able to augment the scarce resource that we have. So that is in terms of the plan that we have put together that given what happened by during COVID and COVID, and of course the criminals or organized crime helping themselves. So not that we have forgotten about those areas, but it's the issue of the resource allowance that we do not necessarily have at this point. But thank you very much, Chairperson. It reminds us that we must continue to look at those areas in terms of our own planning or integrated planning and integrated transport. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I don't know, there was this issue of the signaling between East London and Berlin, which are a cause of concern because there are accidents that result because of the. It's a question that will be responded to by Transnet, or you want to take a bite on this one?
Okay, thank you very much. It is a question that I left for Transnet, but let me just say that PRASA and Transnet shares lots of the infrastructure, including the rail line. So the issue that we have in the Berlin line, we did in fact go onto a metro rail there. The problem is the manual authorization that we have because of the signaling problem. So that is being identified as part of the refurbishment that has to take place, meaning that we are paying attention to that, but also the issue is at the moment we're using a diesel locomotive to pull the train there because of the signal. So when the signal has been addressed, then it will obviously change the situation, including getting a faster train because from East London to Berlin, it's almost a whole day journey because of the stopping in between. So we have identified that as an issue that we need, but I'm sure Transnet can also have a say on it, but it is a joint kind of a share infrastructure resources. But we have said it's important because we run trains that commute passengers. So, and the passengers are in demand of the rail system there. So we need to begin to work towards signaling. There's a proper national program that deal with signaling, because if you can see that all the wires in all provinces, most of it, less in the Eastern Cape, but they were all stolen. So we're dealing with that kind of program in terms of addressing, because RSR is also not happy that we're using this kind of manual authorization, which is danger, there's a risk in it. But thank you very much, Chair. And I think maybe if Transnet could add, if they feel they needed to add, they're welcome to add. Thank you.
Okay. No, thank you very much, Chairperson. But for now, we will ask then the DG on behalf of DPE to respond to questions that were directed to the DPE, and then later Transnet will then respond to the questions, including the one that you're also referring to. DG?
Good afternoon again, Chair. We picked up about three questions that were asked. Chair, the first one from that was asked by Mayor Boshoff and also asked, I think it was yourself, Chair, it was around disciplinary matters and how we are doing in that front, both at ESCOM and other SOEs where we have found wrongdoing. Chair, we have set up a system in the department where forensic reports are logged with us. And what we do is we keep track of the findings as well as the recommendations that are made in these reports, and we engage on a continual basis with the SOEs in terms of progress that they are making in implementing those, including pursuing those that have been found to have been in the wrong. In this regard, we have 754 forensic reports that are logged with us. We have 47 cases emanating from these that have been referred to law enforcement authorities for criminal charges to be pursued. We have about 64 employees that have been dismissed as a result of wrongdoing being found. So 9 employees have been issued with warnings, and we have about 40 employees that have resigned to evade accountability. And that's where it becomes important for law enforcement authorities to come in. But what we are finding is that there's very slow progress of our enforcement machinery in really taking people to task. I think there's cases that are in the public arena that have been cited in people that have been found wanting, been implicated, but we don't see them being arrested, nor being charged, nor having their day in court. And that's one area of a collaboration area that we are putting a lot of effort into, and also getting the professional bodies involved as well, because some of these people carry professional accreditations that would imply to the general public that they are people of integrity. So we need to ensure that those professional bodies are aware that these people have not been up to any good. Chair, on the issue of you raised a proposal, a suggestion of direct selling to the general public, and I think in a way you have answered the question there. What electricity is a big portion of income in these municipalities, and we are finding in some of the municipalities that are highly indebted, that instead of the size of operations reflecting that markup that is made, that size of operations actually become much bigger than that. And that's why we're finding that some of the money that should be going towards paying for bulk services end up being diverted towards paying salaries and so on. So it's an area that requires attention going forward, especially with the Department of the Department COCTA, to say, how do we work together to ensure that, we tend to overuse this word turn around, but how do we turn around municipalities such that they live within their means while delivering quality services to our people? And that would mean that they have to size their operations to the income that they are deriving. But most importantly, we also need to look at how do we diversify income in these communities? And earlier I spoke about the integrated development plans, that they moved just from being documents that are compiled for compliance purposes, but they start to correlate with actual economic development projects that are being undertaken in these municipalities. And they speak to operations, not only of SOEs that are in these localities, but also to the private sector, so that the income stream of these municipalities can be diversified and we can reduce dependence on electricity income. But one more point that I would just like to make there is that the distribution, electricity distribution businesses in our municipalities is an area that's going to need a lot of attention going forward, as hopefully we overcome the challenge we have in generation. And we have seen in some of the of these communities that people complain that electricity is out because of Eskom. But in actual fact, it's out because the local network has not been invested in, and we are having that network being overloaded, transformers as a result exploding and people being cut off. And that is a direct result of in some instances, lack of capacity and capabilities in municipalities to manage those distribution business. And of course, also lack of investment in those communities. In infrastructure in those communities. Lastly, there was a point made by Datumima Moyamang around OEMs and transformation. And it's probably also refers also to dominance of monopolies. I think we need to be a little bit nuanced in terms of how we address this. Because what we are finding in some of our entities, in a really with good intentions to diversify the supplier base and increase opportunities for our people, we are getting people doing business that they should not be doing. We are having people acting as middlemen where they buy OEM parts, for instance, and supply our SOEs, and they add up huge markups. That is not business. We need to look at how, for instance, do we if people are interested in manufacturing, let's look at the areas where they can go in. How do we ensure that they get the necessary varieties, including maybe roping in the likes of SABS to help them to have the right capabilities? And some of these businesses, you can only be profitable when you have scale. And what we rather need to be doing is looking at how do we encourage, in some instances, collaboration amongst the small players so that they can have that critical mass. For instance, in the mining space, where we can say, in order to entice Transnet to be able to provide, the capacity required to move the product. So how do the small players collaborate such that they are able to have to get to that critical mass that will ensure that it is profitable for everyone for that capacity to be provided. So it's an area, Chair, that maybe going forward, we may want to look at and hone in on particular sectors to say, how do we manage that interface between the small players, the big players, and where we have the leverage of an SOE, how do we use that to ensure that we increase opportunities for people, but in a responsible and profitable manner. Thank you, Chair. Those are the points that I had picked up. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Tichi, for the responses. CEO, the Transnet.
Thank you, Chair. Just to have a sense of how much time we have, I'm aware that we've run beyond the time that was planned.
Actually, I'm the last person to respond now. So, yeah.
Okay.
I won't limit you to time because we need to responses to all the questions.
All right. Look, Chair, I've got there are quite a few people on the call, so I will sort of like I'm going to get them to get ready. So the CEO of TFR to talk a little bit about both Mthatha Mabele as well as Kukas Blaney, and hopefully everybody would have picked up the questions. TNPA CEO Bepi Siling is also in the call. We'll pick up on his question. So can I foreground the responses, Chair, especially when it comes to the old Transguy? As Transnet, at the end of the day, and I think we in effect leverage the infrastructure that we have. I think one of the comments that was made, which was around just the state of our balance sheet, is such that we're not in a position right now to do any expansionary investments. You know, the historical injustice of having insufficient infrastructure built in the old Transguy, I think, is something that requires more than just Transnet, PRASA, or even Eskom. There does need to be a response, a broader response from government. around how we help that area to develop, because, you know, as you better than me would know, the population density is such in that part that actually we should be looking for economic activities that would make sense around to support the communities in that area. Now, we are always, whenever we our life is a very hard life, let me tell you, Che, because if we're making a presentation and there's a broad audience of everybody from South Africa, we have to deal with the people, the KZN people will feel we're not doing enough, and then Eastern Cape feels we're not doing enough relative to KZN. We have to deal with Western Cape, and then so our responsibility in the end is to make sure that we enable the South African economy to export whatever it needs to export from whichever point. And we have a responsibility to ensure that the ports are built up effectively. However, there is such a thing as investment efficiencies as well. So the unfortunately, when I was talking about the port of in East London, we have sufficient capacity for 185,000 units from Mercedes-Benz. Mercedes-Benz might argue differently, but what we do know for a fact, the global average for a stay of an efficient auto terminal is supposed to be 6 days of a vehicle. The fully built up units in our case in East London is anything between 13 days, and actually lately, even longer than that 13 days. Now, obviously, if we were to cut down to the six days that we're supposed to be running, we've got double the capacity. So there's more than enough. So one of the things, and so we understand the fact that we've also allowed that